Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review live from Las Vegas. I'm Michael Sidgwick, joined by fellow Dadley Boy Michael Hamflett to discuss everything that happened on last night's show. But before we get into it, very quickly, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we preview and review AEW Dynamite, Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, the show formerly known as NXT 2.0.
Oh!
Premium live events, pay-per-views, roundtable discussions, and we host a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. If you've noticed, the sound quality isn't studio. We are in a hotel room in Las Vegas with a portable microphone. Please bear with us and stay with us because I think we've got a fun one to record today. We went to Dynamite.
We did. We did. We went to Dynamite. We went to Rampage. We went to Ring of Honor. We went to the AEW live experience for the first time. A couple of Brits, capital B, getting to experience AEW. So that will obviously inform the Dynamite review portion of this podcast. I know for a fact that discussions in this podcast and then longer form ones that may creep out in content elsewhere over time will talk about the live experience of AEW live. But trying to isolate it just to Dynamite, the example I gave to you as we were sat in the seats last night was attending the best 2 hours of a party.
Yeah.
Now, I'll let listeners try and infer from that what I might think about some of the rest of it, but they do nail how special the Dynamite portion of the taping feels. You are very aware that you're part of AEW's most premium product. You are aware that you're seeing, hypothetically at least, the biggest stars and the biggest matches and the best potential moments are set to happen right in front of you. And I felt completely like we had that. There were two moments on the show that I felt like all the years of us watching on television, oh God, I wish I was there to experience what one of them's like. And I think we got two.
Yeah.
And I think if Dynamite delivers that to most people in most towns every week, it's why it'll remain successful even when AEW, maybe its heat peaks and has it had peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
It was like a hot promotion. I think Dynamite will remain a hot ticket if it kind of like maintains that. That was my like overarching feeling coming out, because it's different than when you watch the show and you're like, well, I like this booking, I like this booking. It's just different, isn't it?
Yeah, you just like pop for the stars.
Yeah.
You see stars in the flesh doing star things. And like, we'll try and do some analysis. Obviously, I think that's what we're known for. But it was, you do want to analyse when you're watching a live show like that. I'm going to be flown across an ocean to do something I've really wanted to do for a long time. And it's a privilege. I'm going to complain about one thing, but I think it's a really fair one. It did not feel in the building. And I hope Double or Nothing is different. But when the thing that drives you to want to come to America at great expense or whatever, to watch a Dynamite, is that feeling of a throbbing packed in. Not necessarily as big as a WWE crowd, but I'm thinking like the Fighter Fest, the Texas Loops, for when the fans first
this
came
This building
back.
Was the first Double or Nothing.
Yeah, and there were lots of empty seats. It really felt like a promotion that was not hot.
Mm.
Like, still excellent at its peak. Still loud at its peak, but hot, it's not. And that was the difference for me. I didn't get that, wow, everyone's going ballistic. We probably will get it on Sunday.
I think so. I think there's obviously, and AEW know this, they've done this for years, where they've been in the same town, and WWE like it now for the pre-WrestleMania SmackDowns and the like. There's obviously that idea that you're definitely going to be attending the pay-per-view, you might not attend the TV, so we don't even almost need to. Like, Kenny Omega was not on the show in any capacity, nor video package, nor a live appearance, but virtually everyone in that building has got to Double or Nothing. There's no anxiety about not seeing Kenny Omega on television. So I think that's the sort of case where you can maybe get away with not delivering your premium when you know it's on the horizon.
Yeah.
But, yeah, another observation from last night was just how many times have we, you know, over the 4 years of watching it from home, done the review and then had a tweet in good faith from somebody that's been there live and said, I'm surprised to hear what you thought about the crowd last night because, like, I was there and it was really loud in the building. It must be, we talked about AEW's audio mixing and all things like that. I was in the building last night and it wasn't hot in the, like, it wasn't loud in the building. The people that were tweeting us and saying, how's it coming across on television because it's not loud on, like, watching at home. It's like, well, it's not loud here.
It's not
like,
loud.
They'll pop for entrances. There was pops for stars. The matches, one in particular, really had its moment, so much so that it could have gone longer than it did. But, yeah, to your point, I think that throb, that just that frisson is only there when the whole thing is firing. And I just don't think AEW is at the moment.
No, it isn't. I still absolutely loved it. And we're going to have fun with this review, hopefully. But it wasn't a quiet crowd, but it just wasn't remotely packed in that arena.
I know they will, and it'll be well-intentioned. We had a blast.
Yeah.
I do not want this to come across like the Dadley's being miserable.
No, we had an absolutely
in a sun-drenched hotel room in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Like, it was, like, there were points where Dynamite was like a blissful out-of-body wrestling fan experience, and that's what I wanted from it.
The entrances, Jeff Jarrett getting popped in the mouth. I was doing the dance to Garcia. Like, it was honestly class. So I only had one other complaint about the show, but we're going to get into it right now. Not the complaint, the show. I mean, Orange Cassidy opened it up by defeating Kyle Fletcher in a just tremendous TV match that was so cleverly structured. We talked on the preview that, was this a defense too far?
Mm-hmm.
Who are we to doubt Orange Cassidy? Because it was just class. It was really hot when the action really kicked into gear, and that was from pretty much the first 3 seconds, because to really get doubt cast over the outcome, when I did think, right, you know that you're not going to see a change graphic of Fletcher with the title defending it in the blackjack. It's just not happening. So you had to turn off your mind, and we did, because some of it was just so class, the action. But within 3 seconds, Orange Cassidy takes, from our vantage point anyway, because you could see his face. And we had great seats, by the way, not to be complete dicks about it, but we had a great view of the action. It looked like it had gone awry.
Yeah.
It was a very, very, very well-timed, like incredibly well-timed spot for Cassidy to be okay, because he sold it so well. He sold it as if instantly something's gone awry with my neck. I don't know what it is. It hurts. I can feel my fingers. I can keep going. And that informed his selling throughout. And he just thought, this man is just a pure, brilliant professional wrestler. His fire-ups in person are great. It just feels so much more animated when you can see the flesh. There was lots of like incredible head drop moves. The kind of thing where if you were at home, you might think, too many bumps on the head here.
Yeah.
It's getting a bit excessive. When you're there live, keep going.
Mm-hmm.
Bump on your goddamn head. It's really informing the drama here. He snatches, he steals one, but in a Cassidy way, it's like, no, he's just, he had to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He had to survive because he was facing this huge challenge. And he's elevating challenges again. He's selling his arse off to make you think that results are, in fact, in doubt. He's doing great action for the modern audience at the same time. I thought this was perfect for what it was. There was dueling chance that you might have picked up on the broadcast feed. There's also a few groans when Cassidy was doing his comebacks. Do you think they might have overexposed him? Or what was your take on the slight undercurrent of anti-Cassidy sentiment?
So that started with the Aussie, 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 oi, oi, oi call and response.
Yeah.
And as we've learned before with, the best example is Adam Cole working as a heel. Like, that can obviously create this atmosphere in the crowd where it's so much fun to do that. It's so much fun to be part of that chant that you then start backing the wrestler at the expense of the babyface. And I wonder if that was situational, because I didn't feel by the end of the match that there was any boos for Orange Cassidy as a babyface. And in a minute, we're about to get some substantial boos for another babyface.
Mm.
And there weren't for Orange Cassidy by the end. So I feel as though maybe that was as a result of the fans having a bit of fun with the Kyle Fletcher chant as much as anything else. And I hope it was, because I don't want this, like, I think this reign is going to end on Sunday.
Yeah.
I think he's going to lose the title on Sunday. But I don't want it to end with any kind of, like, acrimony between Orange Cassidy and the fans, because this has been this really luxurious, AEW fans love this character, understand the character, and are now getting to see the character subvert everybody's expectations, just to rub it in the face of those that pretend they don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, that's what this whole run, it's not been just for that, but that's been a key feature of this run. And I don't know, I would hate to think that like this could all end in him, people being, oh, I'm glad they've changed it because I'm bored. I want it to be, I'm glad they changed it because they captured my anxiety at its peak and then made me feel something like for whoever beats him.
That was my worry watching this. It's like, have they missed that peak?
I don't think they have. I think it'll be all right.
I'm an anxious guy, aren't we?
This was better. Like, I really enjoyed this lie too, but it was even better after the fact when you consider that obviously Carl Fletcher winning was just not really an option. And Tony Khan had the Aussie Open, his All Elite graphic teed up.
Yeah.
So Orange Cassidy was wrestling a match where he had to put over his fighting spirit and retain the title, and also put over Carl Fletcher as being worthy of getting signed.
He's the best champion in wrestling.
He really is. And I just think, like, his selling, I was comparing him last night to the 1-2-3 kid. Like, he's this tenured pillar. He's a pillar, right? He's a defending champion, 21 title shot in. He's not a small guy, but he was looking like 1993, 94... splattered on the canvas 1-2-3 kid. Such was the nature of his injuries.
Yeah.
That man has gotten, he has fallen apart in front of us, and I think that's why the title change in something cruel like a battle royal is the perfect way to do it,
yeah,
to a heel especially. And I think this was like a nice capper to the reign overall.
We pissed ourselves laughing right at the next bit. It was fantastic. But just a quick note as well, whenever I watch it on Fight, and I don't know, like, if you watch it on TBS or by other, maybe less legal means, right? There are so many, like too many, 4 years in, on the actual TV broadcast feed of backstage segments where you miss the first two sentences someone says.
Yeah.
Because it's not picked up. And it's usually quite low, and you're hearing out for it. For whatever reason, in the arena when they play this stuff through the screen, it's the loudest thing I've heard in my life. So not only was I incredulous at how loud it was coming through the screen, I was like, why does it not sound like that on television? We had Juice Robinson and Jay White ambushing and beating up Ricky Starks, who said, it's over and done with. And Jay White and Rick and Robinson, Juice Robinson, said, no, it isn't. Beat him up. Beat down's quite cool. Juice Robinson is over now.
Yes. What a night he had here.
His screeching, his boasting at the top of his voice, that ridiculously hammed up like cadence of his, was awesome. We were literally howling in the stands when he was doing this.
Howling laughing at Juice Robinson, finally getting more of the, like, it was more as a babyface he did this sort of thing, but it's obviously, a character is a character regardless of a heel or a babyface, and he's never really got to flex some of the things that we loved about him. Like, what, 2017 probably was popping off like this? So you've seen so little of this, and it was so much fun to get it. And it brought out the best in Jay White as well. Is this a pose? He just kept mimicking the pose. And it just, out of nowhere, I think this is the most heated up Jay White and Ricky Starks has ever been. My complaint for weeks on this was, you have profoundly failed to give this story a personal issue. And now we've got one. Ricky Starks said he knew exactly what he was doing. People said he lost control, but was that the point? You see, people think I lost control. I didn't. I was in full control of my actions, and I had no problem smashing you with a chair, and I'd do it again. So they attack him. There's hatred now. Like, I want the rematch way more than I wanted the first match.
Yeah, no, they've never established a premise.
No, and now there is one. And this was a success for this angle. And as we later found out, like, well, we were later led to assume, at least, that they'll both be in the Battle Royal. Perfect. Like, let's see some of this fight play out where there's a title on the line, but not one that, like, particularly compromises anything right now.
Yeah.
Like, really good stuff.
Really good. Oh, God damn it, my notes have disappeared. But up next, it was this is not going to be one of those, you know, if you go to a live show, you'll only get some insights from the people who were there. I think you probably heard the boos for Jack Perry through the goddamn TV screens.
Oh, boy.
They, in this arena at least, did not like him. It was, it's a muted pre-tape backstage promo, the kind that a lot of wrestlers can cut, and probably not the one that he needed to do on that night, because they want to believe in him as an all-rounder who's on the level, who could be a main event talent, and it feels like there's been an acknowledgement within AEW that he struggled with a live microphone. So it felt a bit like cowardly, maybe. But then again, I don't envy him. But regardless, his reaction was not positive, not favourable whatsoever. He came out later in a separate segment, which we'll get to, obviously. And a lot of people did do the Baltimore.
Yeah.
Don't know if it was just a fun thing to do, and it's a good song. but, and again, you can't tell how many people are booing. It just felt like at least multiple people in every single area, because it was kind of like a chorus.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about his humble beginnings, driving to Vegas, and before he went to Double or Nothing the first time, his life got turned upside down, and he's going to make the drive home at last on Monday morning. Whatever, it's pretty boilerplate babyface stuff that for some reason he's doing, as is the heel Sammy Guevara in this goddamn storyline. I think that this segment, the reaction to it, coupled with something else that happened later, I understand fans being tepid to this,
mm-hmm.
like sort of apathetic, and that is reflected in the ratings. This felt like they were outright rejecting it, like in a way that I've not seen since WWE of the late 2010s. That's probably an exaggeration. Sorry, because like it's not Rumble 2015 or Hell in a Cell 2019 tier. But from what I ascertained from that atmosphere was people just could not be bothered with this pillar stuff.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the segment, because there was so much to that pillar segment later on that we can focus on, say, for example, MJF later on. But just as a point to your point about Jungle Boy and that WWE comparison, later on in the night, Jungle Boy was booked to cap the segment off by holding the AEW title aloft, and Sammy Guevara was on a turnbuckle in the ring, and the fans loudly chanted, "Sammy," while Jungle Boy held the belt up.
I felt pissy because I don't really like Sammy either.
That's the protest, though.
Yeah.
That's the protest chant, and I think that was the... Pissy's the word, but I don't tend to... Like, we don't turn on fans for voicing their opinions, do we? It's about booking, and it's about if you want fans to react a certain way, you're supposed to book for that, and obviously Jungle Boy just hasn't been that throughout the story, really. And I think we saw that laid bare, and because it's in the same... It's not in the same building, but it's just down the road at the T-Mobile, you get the feeling, well, that's what Vegas has decided, so... Jungle Boy's got to work extra hard to pull them into one of his near falls now on Sunday. And I don't think this talent... MJF had a line later on that was vindicated by how people reacted to Jungle Boy's promo.
That line was too funny.
Too good. Like, and it's like, well, what the heels just said in his obnoxious voice was proven true earlier in the night.
Yeah.
That's the worst case scenario.
And it was too funny.
The room popped.
But I popped as well.
Yeah, it was class.
I really, really funny, so I popped. Second proper FTR came out. We hear from FTR. They basically did the usual heat you would get on Jeff Jarrett, burying Impact. His quote, I'm not saying this, bitch of a wife. Dixie Carter was referenced.
They got some good oohs for like these names.
That's the best way. Like, can you say that? Yeah, of course you can. Of course you can say it.
They got boos from somebody in my section.
They did. Dax Harwood used the old Graham line of. Broke a million guitars, never drew a dime, except changed it to broke a million guitars, but never could get relevant. Now they're trying to get relevant off FDR's name. That simply isn't happening. This summons Mark Briscoe, comes out, and Dax Harwood motions to, say, come on, don't be an idiot, Mark.
Shake my hand,
don't be an idiot, don't let them manipulate you sort of thing. And Mark Briscoe slaps the piss out of Dax Harwood's face with no delay whatsoever. This man will not be insulted because he's a man. And then out comes the gang.
Yeah.
Planet Jarrett. Give them the name because you need to merchandise it.
Yes.
Because would you buy a Planet Jarrett AEW t-shirt?
100%. Like,
it's the best gang of all time.
Yeah.
It's the best gang. Jarrett, a genius, Carney.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not an oxymoron because he can't be great at it, and he is. Smiles
so wide, so teeth wide, seats clapping away. Like.
He's so happy, and he's caught unawares because he's caught unawares is because he would never be aware of an incoming threat from him because he's thought he's played him.
Yeah,
he's played that stupid Rube, and he gets slapped in the face as well, and it's magnificent. And it's not obviously as good as the angle last week, but it establishes what to expect from Mark Briscoe as a special guest ref, which I think is important. And I've loved this feud; I think it's been tremendous, and seeing. There was one fatal flaw, though.
What's that?
You didn't get Bree Woo.
I know, but I
think of me, right? The guy who hates the entrance music interruptions. It just makes it feel fake and staged.
Yeah.
Even I was like, what gives Bree Woo?
I was like, I didn't get Bree Woo and you didn't get Kenny Omega, but we're safe in the knowledge that we're getting both on Sunday, and thank God for that.
Yeah.
That was the idea as well. Like, I don't want to put too much pressure on this match, but I don't feel like I'm doing so with what I'm about to say. It feels like this can't fail. Like, in the building, like, what we've seen on television...
There's too much good bollocks.
Yeah. What you've seen on television has been so effectively presented, and it's been really well paced out, and it's never insulted your intelligence in the way that Planet Jarrett thought they were doing to Mark Briscoe. Not once.
Yeah.
And I just think, right down to the go-home angle, which didn't need to be as impactful as the ones from the week prior, because we've done that, we've, like, laid all the story out at this point. This was about as far away from... We've done all the heat stuff, now it's time for some Wikipedia references with the pay-per-view. This was a perfect angle advancement at the last minute. Mark Briscoe, like, knows who have got his back, really. He knows that FTR has got his back, but he's entitled to be pissed off. And now we know that he's not going to take Jarrett's nonsense. And that's exactly where it needs to be pitched, because now Karen Jarrett and Sonjay Dutt can be kind of difficult for Mark. If they were being his best friends, they wouldn't have the narrative justification to be difficult with him and distracting him. Now they're like... What are you doing, you stupid idiot? And all that kind of stuff. It just feels like it cannot fail.
It cannot fail. And there's too many smoke and mirror spots. Mm-hmm. There's too many like referees getting pulled out of the ring by Karen Jarrett.
Yeah.
His face when happens.
I need Jarrett's on his knees, double fist pump again.
Yeah. And then go for the cover and then get the 2.9. He's the absolute best. Ray Paquette interviews Sammy Guevara backstage. MJF had a message that he wanted to relay. Basically, the offer still stands for Guevara to lay down for a tidy sum of money at Double or Nothing. Guevara said, hell no, he's not for sale. Whole life he's wanted people to buy him out of his dreams. He likes talking about dreams a lot, Sammy Guevara. It feels like baby's first baby face, his act. And it's like, it's 4 years into his heel run, pretty much.
The JS got to beat him up next week. Like, because
this does not... It this doesn't work, does it? And I think it will. Yeah. I don't necessarily think... The means justify the ends, to butcher that phrase, where, right, okay, this leads to Jericho versus Sammy, but to make that make sense, Sammy has to go babyface and alone and on his own, and Jericho starts to feel like, oh, do you think you can do it by yourself? I'll show you, I'll beat you up, sort of thing, because he's never interested in the progression of his career, just having a heavy, basically, like a little brat who can do some jobs for him. But yeah, the crowd don't like this either. They don't like him here, and then the boom, and then they cheer him because he's not Jack Perry later. How could he kill two baby face, a baby face?
I don't think the Pillars story is... I think it's far from a disaster, and the match will be
I think it's a disaster. I think, artistically, I've been really entertained by this. Mm-hmm. I've seen something from Darby Allin that I haven't seen. Particularly opposite MJF on a one-on-one verbal sparring scenario.
Sort of bookend of the program, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that that's a... They can do that again. Like, they can't do MJF versus babyface Jack Perry. It takes some doing, basically. So I'm not saying it's been this disastrous WWE nonsense. I think it's been flawed. Certainly WWE logic has inspired it. Certainly match results not mattering and getting retconned really wound me up. But it's been plotted together. There's been some entertaining things. It's just... What the ratings have done, the hype, the gates, and what they've done to Jack Perry, it's a disaster. Don't know whose shoulders the blame can be laid on here.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a combination of everything. But the gutting thing is, and I've said this a million times, it's a noble failure.
Yeah.
They've tried to push four young guys, like, for four consistent years in the shadow of a company that tells you that your investment in anyone except top stars who've been around for years means nothing.
Yeah.
It was everything a lot of people wanted for a long, long time.
Mm.
And maybe perspective should be maintained on that, but it just hasn't worked at all.
Like, obviously, this will be the second time already we've, like, sort of jumped ahead to what MJF said in his bit. But his, as we said, you know, put the other guys over, but put yourself over more. His stirring, right, I'm going to... Let's sell a pay-per-view if we can. His stirring words were, like, so effective that it almost made the last, like, 8 weeks of television redundant.
Yeah, I know.
He was so good at delivering the message before he got back to being the funny guy or the, like, prick heel or whatever, that it did sort of, like, you know when you sometimes step back from wrestling and you're like, oh, you could just do week one, I'm the best, no, I'm the best, see you then, and then have nothing.
Yeah.
You can't, because it's weekly television. Yeah, and you're supposed to be invested in these stories that go up and down. But the brass tacks is it could just be that if it wanted to be. And MJF kind of reminded you of that. It was all too raw a feeling of like, God, when he's talking, he's right. Goddamn, 4 years. What have we been doing?
I know.
What have we been doing without when it was just that?
Right.
It was just that at the beginning, and it's just that now.
House of Black defeated Blake Christian, Metalik, and AR Fox to retain the trio's titles. Open house. Should we be honest with the listeners here?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, they didn't tell us what the rule was, and we couldn't really work it out.
They put something on the board, on the Titantron, and I think it was just the regular no DQs, no rope breaks thing. Yeah. And they hadn't added the like the jobber's house rule. They hadn't added it, so we didn't know.
And there's not really hard and fast rules on a trios match in AEW to begin with, so we'll just say, and we've had some beers, so we'll just use that as our excuse. The lighting, right, this is where the bias from the live perspective comes in. On telly, I think it's so hokey. I think it frames the House of Black in this sort of positive, ominous light, but the babyface is just nothing. It does nothing for them at all. Mm. So I hated it on TV. And live, this is cool. This is Vegas. This is a show.
It's really cool.
Like, my inner sort of lore nerd came out here, and I was like, no, I quite like this.
Yeah,
I quite like this.
People, like, so I tweeted that, and people in the replies were saying it was way better than last week. Now, I don't know if that's just last week was kind of a nightmare. Like, it's all too dark.
Yeah.
Whereas this week, obviously, they had the nice... I was calling the spiders in the crowd because they were these, like, looked like spiders' legs. And the ring was really, like, you know, Steve Austin when I was going to his podcast. You need to light that sucker up and dark the crowd. It's all about what's on those bright lights, like the Harley Race thing. It was that, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The ring was really beautifully lit. And I thought this is the compromise. Keep this. Because if, like, at least on television, if you can see the visuals of what's going on in ring, and, like, again...
I would just get rid, personally.
I can understand that. Like, he did it facing us. Brody Lee doing the choke facing us, and obviously facing the hard camera.
Oh, my... I don't have the button.
I wanted the button. Against that light, looked even more terrifying.
Yeah.
Like, you were in hell, and this is happening to you.
Yeah,
he's already thought it was bad enough, and now this is happening to you. And I think that's where that can be super effective.
Yeah. Match was action-packed. Basically, a murder with a few bright hope spots in there, but, like, a really great murder. Like, the House of Black with their body language are so good at basically conveying a sense of total doom.
Yeah.
That, whether it's AR Fox not realising that Brody King was stood, knowing that he was about to do a move when AR Fox thought that Brody King was, like, out. They did a similar spot with Blake Christian. Like, that just sense of suspense and doom, and then... Oh, the Doom looked really cool because Malakai Black either kicked your face off with this ridiculous roundhouse. Buddy Matthews has got this V-trigger where it's like, how is he nose not broke? And Brody King can just monster it around. Like, I just love the way they register how imminently and violently they're going to hurt you. Like, there's a body language act. Like, body language, greater than symbol, law.
Mm, like, the way that, they patrol a ring in such terrifying fashion. You know, we said this about... The BCC are really good at doing that backstage.
Yeah.
The way they like round on people's really intimidating. The House of Black are the in-ring version of that.
Yeah.
Like, when those three stand in the ring, it goes without saying that they're massive, but they are high flying, high impact, like hybrid versions of Big E's big meaty men slapping meat. Because they are massive. They absolutely monster these guys in their own ways. They're like Alistair Black's quite lithe compared to Buddy Matthews and Brody King. But he looks 100 foot tall over these poor losers. Like, he looks absolutely monstrous, and it's such a brilliant act. It's
so over as well.
Massively so. I'm like the last guy that signs in for any of like their presentation, be it the music.
Yeah.
Like, I like these lights, but fundamentally, I wouldn't normally go for it. You know, The Fiend, we talked about Bray Wyatt before. Like, I don't know, seeing it in person does transform, can transform your opinions of it. And we said this when they were feuding with the Elite. They are hard to tell stories with because, like, Malakai Black's stuff can kind of disappear up its own ass a little bit. But this team doesn't need stories for the matches to be hot. And maybe in one division that's enough.
Yeah.
It's bad practice across the whole show.
Yeah, but maybe
it's good
in
a division.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I agree. Another backstage segment. There's the video recap of the Elite's reunion last week, and then in response, Bryan Danielson says they've got objectives over this weekend, the first of which is to win the ROH Tag Team titles, and the one on Sunday is to put an end to the Elite. John Moxley says that they do the job the way it's supposed to be done. No one in this industry is better than they are at stepping up to the plate when it counts, and they will deliver a storm of violence. This is cool, and it gets much better. Moxley's promo stuff later.
Like, only John Moxley could make this his second best promo of the night.
Yeah, I know.
God damn. Like,
he's the best.
So good.
Four Pillars do the face-off in the ring. So it's basically MJF comes out. He's followed by, and we're getting to his promo, followed by Darby Allin, who kicks the balls, and the other Pillars come out, and Sammy Guevara comes out to defend Allin. And then when MJF retreats, Jungle Boy blocks him from the stage with his belt, and then he scurries away. So that's basically the framework of the segment. And it's MJF's too funny, and he's too good, and he's outclassed him again. Like, I'm not being funny. He comes out, and he's over. He projects dark quality. Again, live, that baritone. He's just born to talk.
Yeah.
He's got that voice where he's born to talk. Like, the rhythm, the poise, he was just born to talk. Born to public speak, born to wrestle, basically, born to be a great wrestler. And he says this line, he really puts them over at the start. Like, he really puts them over. And whenever you see it on TV, you think, all right, okay. People like to play along when they go to a wrestling show. Mm-hmm. He gets you.
Yeah.
This was such a babyface promo that you think, Jesus Christ, the guy's going to be an amazing babyface one day. But he believes everything he's saying here. And he's got that sort of cult leader charisma where you just want to believe everything he says, even though he's proven for the last 4 years to be like a really disingenuous heel snake devil.
The devil has temptations, like he'll buy your soul to give you what you want.
Nice. No, like, he's unbelievable. His control of the crowd is masterful, to the point where when he said you know, the pillars have been great, we're giving you the best matches, I don't even think that's true. They've had some great ones. MJF Danielson's one of the best in history in AEW, and in fact wrestling history.
I mean,
probably.
He nailed the law more than any week of television has attempted to.
But like, there's no Hangman Page, Kenny Omega, Young Bucks, like those matches are, you know, CM Punk, Eddie Kingston, like there's Jericho, Moxley, there's loads. But in that moment, he just gets you to believe it, even if you analyse it. It's actually, no, I like that much better, I'm that much better. And then he changes his mind and says, actually, I'm just getting bored of this place. It was kind of weird because when he saw the empty green seats, he was like, do you believe that? Like, you know, I hope not. But that summons Darby Allin. They have a tete-a-tete. It's more of the same, to be quite honest. Darby Allin's wearing weird shoes. I hope he doesn't wear them on. And then MGF says, your stilts.
I'm going to knock you back on the stilts you walked in on.
Yeah.
The stilts you walked in on.
That's unbelievable. Oh, the line, by the way, about Jack Perry, that was too funny.
Oh, boy.
That you knew anyway, because you probably watched the show, was, I want to put you into an echo chamber so that you can bore yourself to death listening to your own voice.
Oh no. Like,
he kind of has to say it, but
the building that already booed him out of it.
Yeah.
And then he says that. Aye, that was rough.
And I
that
get
was
it.
Rough.
And I get it. He's meant, like, Jack Perry's meant to get the nominal. He wins the segment.
Yeah.
I've got your belt and I'm going to get it for good. So I understand why he said that line because it fed the next bit. You're meant to hate that line, but people just hate Jack Perry more. I don't know what's happened.
MJF.
If anything, some of Darby Allin's material was more douchey.
Ah, yeah, it was.
Jack Perry's on the mic earlier in the feud.
He was on about last night. He was talking about, like.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
AEW was giving me like opportunities to work with Tony Hawk's and then other and names I didn't know from like Mountaineering, house jumping off.
Yeah.
Like people that are big in those things.
Yeah.
Darby Allin's worked with them. Thanks, AEW. Like, it's just, no, MJF has got the right reasons why AEW is great. AEW is great because of everything MJF said, not because Darby Allin's been able to film jumping off his house with his best friend. That's like a nice thing for Darby Allin. But as a wrestling fan, are you not more engaged in what MJF's talking about? Like, the Pillars has meant that you've had the best matches you've ever seen. Like, it's great. It's like, you are wrestling fans, and we're giving you great wrestling.
Yeah.
That's how his babyface act lurks underneath. I'm giving you everything you want. I hate you.
Yeah,
what? What? You just said you're giving me everything I want. Like, he got that enormous pop when he came out. They threw coffee at Tony Schiavone.
Yeah, no.
Like, even then, he's like, well, I'll do that. Like, I'm not even going to give you the time for me to walk down the ring and love me before I do something that's going to make you hate me, or at least remind you that you get both, whether you want it or not. And then the line about not being on the level of the devil.
That's great.
He keeps flipping devil around in sentences to make the line cool all over again.
He's clasped, he's above this, and it's hopefully he recovers, because his stock is taking a hit. And this feud has not been it, but I think there must be an awareness in the company. They're so on the pulse.
Yeah.
And they're looking like they're prepping Cole. MJF with the material on Adam Cole, given the injury, could be absolutely spectacular.
I'll say that they're not short of this was an observation of mine from last night. They are badly, badly in need of heels, but at least your world champion is a heel, so you've got no shortage of baby faces to try him against.
Yeah, absolutely. We didn't. Apparently the televised audience got a vignette of Wardlow. There was a weird sort of Berenstain Bears effect around the audience. Did we see this vignette with Wardlow?
They played loads of Road 2 footage in the building before Dynamite started, and there was definitely a Christian Wardlow arm thing there.
Yeah.
But this one, because Simon Miller had recorded his ups and downs and then was asking us about it afterwards, because I don't remember this, do you? No.
No.
This didn't happen in the building.
Certainly it didn't happen, but according to the notes that people have said on Twitter, he says he's got a history with ladders, and so do I in AEW, because he won the face of the Revolution ladder match, and you know, that just basically tells you they're both good at ladder matches, so who's going to win? Because I mean, it's smart and it's fair, what it is.
I think your ladder match experience is a weird one, right? Because, fair enough, face of Revolution match is a ladder match victory.
Yeah.
But like, when you say about Christian or Edge or the Hardy Boys, it's because like, these are like epics entrenched in lore.
Yeah.
Shawn Michaels, right? The two against Razor. And there's other examples. Like, one win, like, I got a history with ladders, you can climb. Like, I've got a history with ladders too, because I have to when the kids were little, I had to climb up to get them when they're in the soft play.
Yeah.
I've got a history with ladders. Like, it's
the thing is that gimmick,
that's a hard law to
it is
to own,
particularly since the ladder match is now so prevalent.
Yeah,
everyone's got a history with ladders.
Could work like three matches in the NXT. I work 16 ladders.
Yeah. That's true though, there's too friggin' many of them. Like, too much my bloody yaff.
But again, like, just so we're not complete dicks. Like, I love this angle. I think Wardlow's back. Arn Anderson's made Wardlow brand new, and this match is going to rule.
And Christian Cage is awesome.
He's a beast.
It's going to be class. Taya Valkyrie defeated Lady Frost. My take on this was I thought this was a decent match. Wasn't blow away great, but I thought they put something together that was solid, which I'm not really into, but live, you know, it's fine.
We heard some, a bit of disdain towards Ty Valkyrie's work in the crowd from some people near us.
Yes.
I don't back that. Like, they were critical of her sort of, like, her in-ring being, like, too slow and performative, and I the match went too long would be my criticism against that. For what they were trying to achieve, I understand that you want to give Lady Frost, like, a big night, and she got one, actually. I think people are, like, sort of
athletically very, very impressed.
Yeah.
She's got that, she's not anywhere near this good. But she's got that pack kind of movement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, and he
like
took
a snap, intense athleticism.
He took a while to make some of those rotations count.
Yeah.
I think when he did, like, it all clicked into place. And I think you kind of see that in her early. But the story isn't there. The need for this to go 10 minutes wasn't really there. You get the same match, couldn't you? She was physically dominant. And like,
yeah, the physical the story basically was Taya Valkyrie was more physically dominant, but then Lady Frost, with her athleticism and her sort of enthusiasm to show out on her first big TV match, really got into the match. This kind of infuriated Taya Valkyrie, who just chopped the piss out of her, and it was very loud. It was like really quite vile, and it was great.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a Young Lions match, if you want to talk about structure, of this person is showing something I didn't expect. I'm going to exert my veteran prowess to be really nasty and put them in their place. That's what this was. And I think it was a better idea than just doing a simple squash, because it would be patronising otherwise to just have a waste of time, quite frankly, particularly when you have emerging prospects like Lady Frost who can come and do a job, or at least try to just have a 2-minute squash match. Mm. It's the most basic storytelling imaginable, so I'm quite glad that they flipped the script to some extent.
In the absence of where we typically bury this division with ladies' night, I will just say what we were talking about this morning. There are two singles matches at Double or Nothing that don't have a stipulation, and those two are both women's title matches. Yeah. Every other singles match is stipped up. These ones aren't. And you know, I'm not going to go into like a big rant about the women's division now, because I think on the night both matches could actually deliver. But the fact that like neither Toni Storm versus Jamie Hayter, or especially Jade Cargill and Taya Valkyrie, is stipped up in comparison, is kind of criminal. Because in this one in particular, the story was first contract beef, and for the rematch, it's Jade Cargill staring at her on the ramp.
Yeah, nah.
Like, and I just think, considering there's no ladder here, there's no friggin' ex-ECW legend randomly inserted as an enforcer here.
Yeah.
There's nout. And what have you got to back them up? Standing on a ramp. Yeah. I just think it's pretty shan. It's not on, is it? It's
very,
not good form.
Very poor. We get the collision announcement. Tony Khan looked happy. It was the expected announcement that the collision debut will in fact happen on, at the United Center on June 17th, is it?
Uh-huh.
It's weird, man. Like,
second loudest the building was all night, probably?
Probably the second loudest the building was all night. Booming chance of CM Punk. I obviously haven't watched the broadcast back yet. I've not had time. Bits of it on Twitter here and there. But I wonder if they did the full pan. Because that would have been the ideal scenario.
Mm.
Look at the entire arena going crazy for the rumour of he was going to return.
Yeah.
They couldn't really do that. Maybe the front row. It wasn't that empty, but you know what I mean.
Shout out to regular listener Rat Mains, who did reference, because we were wondering in the building, and he referenced that he could see a lot of green seats on screen, and we were scratching our heads as to why that hard camera side in particular hadn't been just filled in with people. It wasn't a full building by half, but you could have made it a full side.
Yeah,
like our side, we were
maybe they just don't like doing the thing of get to that side, because maybe you've bought a ticket, you've wanted that particular view on us.
I think there's worse things from a fan experience point of view that you're going to get at one of these tapings than having your seat moved.
Oh, Jesus Christ. We'll get to that. We don't want to be too grumpy, but God, we will get to it. It's a monster pop by the standards of that crowd anyway, in that building, for the very sort of explicit tease of CM Punk. And it's weird. I understand, right, that there's going to be two rosters to accommodate CM Punk and to keep him away from his enemies, which is an entire roster full of people.
The AEW graphic, CM Punk doesn't address his enemies.
Yeah, no. Just CM Punk versus Dynamite. That's basically where we are at right now. And I understand that they're going to keep them separate. Hopefully there's a four times per year, or six including All In, six times per year exception, where it's like, right, you're going to just have to see each other or pass each other, or be in the same building as each other, will, you know, separate locker rooms, whatever, will make it work. Because like, you can't be doing some B-level split roster pay-per-views. All of that said, if you're in the Elite, and there were people in that faction on this show hearing that, it's like, well, I hate it. I absolutely hate it, and I don't want to hear that.
Just the response?
Yeah.
Just the Chicago getting set.
I think if you're like the Young Bucks and you hear that pop, thinking,
yeah,
I'm trying hard. I'm gonna work like a really violent match on Sunday,
like refresh WrestleTix this morning, then throw the phone.
It's just all of these things, like these tiny little
strange
moments.
These
tiny moments might add up to just fuel this resentment and to create more of it. Backstage, get an interview between Hangman Page. It's Marvez asked him the question about what's his status with the friendship with the Young Bucks, and he said, like, love the Young Bucks. Always best of friends, even though it hasn't been that way for the last few years. Him and Omega were different, but you've used them as family, and they find themselves at anarchy in the arena, try to take my eye, Matt's arm, Nick's shoulder, and somehow cost Kenny Omega Don Callis, not that he's bothered. A Double or Nothing, the BCC will pay in blood. I think Hangman Page has done better work, but it was too short to be worth analysing.
Yeah, a quiet night for the Elite, which makes you think they're going to hope the work stands up for themselves on, like, Selfless in a way. Like, if we're going to babyface that, like, Selfless, because they didn't, and I would say apply this to the Young Bucks later on, like, kind of minimalist approach from the Elite side of things.
Yeah,
but
they've done their big bit.
Yeah, that was their last week. So they've given this to the BCC, so the stakes are level going into Anarchy Arena. Can't fault it, but it wasn't like
I was expecting the big bully brawl.
It wasn't massively backing them coming out of this show.
Yeah,
that's a sort of.
The match will be.
They'll work me into it. We've been promised it by the guy that never lies. So like,
and we get a contract signing next, but they specifically say it's obviously not a contract to agree to the match because it's not sanctioned. It's to say that no one's like libel or whatever. A hold harmless, to use WWE's terminology on it. So it's Cole, it's Jericho, and it's kind of weird, I think, that Cole, who I don't care about his size, I'm not an idiot, I don't enjoy a version of 1980s wrestling that didn't actually exist, I'm not one of those weird guys. But when he does Moxley adjacent threats about breaking bones,
yeah,
it's a bit weird because I don't believe he can do it. But crucially, I believe he thinks he can do it because his verbal performance here was great.
Mm.
He was very over in that building. Chris Jericho, in response, he gets a big pop for saying, "Sign it, bitch."
Yeah.
And then everyone chants, "Bitch, bitch, bitch," Jericho, who says, "I'm not a bitch. I don't come from Las Vegas."
Got him.
It's great. It's a stupid cheap pop. It's the easiest improvisation you'll ever do. I don't think anyone from Las Vegas was there last night because everyone just comes from different places to come to Vegas.
JS as clowns, by the way, just for background entertainment.
Oh, it works.
Fantastic.
They're so good.
I do not appreciate that on television, but seeing their live, I couldn't take my eyes off whatever they were up to.
Their stupid outfits,
yeah.
Like Garcia's faces when Cole was saying stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he looked mortally offended. Like, that's an act that maybe time will be kinder to.
I think so.
I'm starting
to think
so.
Great.
Yeah.
Aesthetically as well. I got it way more, like, seeing them in the flesh than I've ever have done. Which says something, maybe. I don't know, like, they maybe don't project it quite as much, but a lot of fun to see that live.
Yeah, so Jericho, again, touches on what he's been saying on commentary by saying, like, how could you just sit there and watch? Like, he was handcuffed. He was meant to be handcuffed. And Cole's having none of it. He says, like, they kind of go nose to nose. And Jericho
putting together a custom-made video when he knows that Cole can't touch him, where he just kept looping the shots over and over again. Like, what can we do to neg him when he can't hit me?
Yeah,
that was a good, like, you could believe in character. We joke about Kyle O'Reilly makes the tapes the night before.
Yeah.
That's the one you can believe. Jericho, like, get me the footage again.
Yeah,
he can't do anything in response again.
And he's a sports entertainer.
He is.
So it's fine. You're allowed to do WWE tropes because they've sort of written themselves to do it. There's one more bit that I was going to say. Oh, he should have mentioned the line, right? Because on Rampage, when that angle with Baker and Saray had just happened, Chris Jericho was like, can you believe a man the caliber of Adam Cole who wouldn't even save his woman from getting beat up in the ring? And it's just a classic Jericho, like, you prick. Like, sometimes you're not good, and then sometimes you're the best, and then sometimes you just pop us like this.
Yeah.
Why don't you save his woman? He should have just done it again. I love him sometimes more.
That's that elite one for the day. You know what I want.
You know what I want.
I want my baby back there.
He wants to save his woman. So he says, why did it all happen? Cole says, could be because Jericho's a scumbag, because he believes he's invincible. You find out on Sunday how invincible Jericho truly is, and then Jericho says that, well, you talk a big game, but it's unsanctioned. There are no rules. I've got 5 with me, and you've got 2. That's not true, because he's got the best amigos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's got Keith Lee.
I didn't think of that, yeah.
And it's very loose.
Oh, I didn't consider that. Everyone was in the building was going, is Kyle O'Reilly about to come back?
Yeah.
I didn't even consider the actual friends they've established.
That's the thing they've established, because they're obsessed with this kind of storytelling and this way of prolonging the big matches, basically, that they write themselves into corners.
Mm.
And you can't...
Then he gets himself out with an insane cameo.
Yeah. So what happens here, right? And I love this so much because it's stupid and it's insane. Is that in order to tie up the plot hole of Cole's probably going over, but Chris Jericho could, he's well within his rights in the context of the match to say, right, there's going to be 5 members of the JAS just beat up Adam Cole because he's only got 1 mate, even though he hasn't. We'll just win in 5 minutes. So to tie up that plot hole, Tony Khan books Adam Cole to have a mate who's functioning as a special guest enforcer, and it's Sabu.
What?
It's so surreal, like, in any context, seeing Sabu on AEW programming is a bit nuts. It's one of those where it's like, it shouldn't be, because Tony Khan probably idolises him from his era of fandom.
He probably cannot believe he's got the opportunity to book him.
When anyone can.
Like, anyone can. Like, Tony Khan will be doing, like, the press conference hug. Guys, it's Sabu doing the point. Like,
honestly,
I was the thing was going up the air. I was like, there's the original one.
He's got the best music ever.
It's unbelievable.
It's so good.
That draining saxophone is unreal,
it's
isn't
so
it?
So good. Yeah. It's so ominous. It's amazing. And Sabu comes down, I pop my tits off, don't do the lights off, it's ridiculous. And all I could think about was nothing. I just kept doing that. Sabu, because it was, sorry to call, you know, Matt Striker, but it was a mark out.
It was, the drop was. I was kept looking over, I was like, I wonder what Taz thinks. I've watched it back, Taz at law, everything, my past.
And then, why is Adam Cole made to Sabu? Can you imagine them hanging out?
No.
Never. Like, in fact, there's no two different wrestlers I can imagine.
You know, like, that bit we sometimes do, like, I got a friend, and I think you know the guy. Right, leave a gap. Right, let's time to play the game. Who's the guy? You could name 100 wrestlers before you get. And I think you know the guy. Sabu? No? Like, oh yeah, he always wanted to join the Undisputed Era.
Yeah.
Like, Sabu's game, but it's yellow and black.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be amazing. Do that.
Yeah.
Comes out, through the chair in Daddy Magic's face. He's up for it. Daddy Magic's probably asked for it. Like, come on, do it on my face. Like, what if Sabu could do a sting run?
Oh, mate.
I don't think he can. I don't think he can do anything.
Who have we had that's, like, been a, like, one... Homicide is probably a good one for Grand Slam. Like, these insane one-night cameos that go down a storm.
Yeah.
And then just leave it.
Yeah.
That was great. Preserve it in amber and let's never speak of this again. This was one. And this, along with the Orange Cassidy international title match, was what I was describing at the start of the podcast. This is the Dynamite experience, and Tony Khan deserves a lot of credit for curating a wrestling show that can open those doors. Like, this door's kind of more forbidden than the New Japan.
It's like a...
How's he?
There's an AEW Dynamite bucket list.
Yeah.
You want a 5-star match on TV.
Yeah.
You want an all-timer promo. You want some Sabu-adjacent insanity.
Yeah.
Like, loads of blood. Like, a death match. There's, like, loads of different things. We got two of them, I think, definitely. Sabu. We're mental. We went mental. Like, what are you meant to do?
It was, you know, the building liked him, and I think that was there was something nice, and AEW has obviously been phenomenally successful at harnessing this. I like going to WWE shows a lot more than you, but I like...
Oh, Clash at the Castle ruled.
There are obvious exceptions, right, but...
WrestleMania 35, I was bored.
Yeah, right. So, like, I can still have a good time at these ostensibly quite dull WWE shows. But one thing you really noticed, and I think Sabu is a good example of this, is like, and this is okay, time's arrow marches forward. The crowd profile at a WWE show has changed, and not every legend is going to get the guaranteed pop that we would.
Yeah.
Remember Sid working Heath Slater?
That was one thing.
I was like, why is that crowd not going ballistic for Sid? It's Sid. Like, he means so much to me, but like, it's okay. People get older and people have their different favourites. Like, Sabu was like, bringing the Rock out at a WWE event.
Yeah.
It means that much to an age profile without any... There's no videos, no history package. They've taken a gamble on the rough age profile of enough people in that building. We had a child sat in front of us and a child sat behind. But, like, I would say probably 90% of the fans in that building were our age. And, like, you could tell by the T-shirts and the reference points and stuff. AEW has used that to its terrific advantage for stuff like this. Like, Tony Khan still knows that his audience mostly wants what he wants.
Yeah.
I don't look forward to the days that changes.
Yeah. 3-4 years, I think he'll still do it. So, spinning off from that, Roderick Strong and Daniel Garcia are already in their attire because they're having a match. It was just sort of, like, nicely sort of transitioned to that match. Honestly, I don't think this approached the ceiling, which was, like, an exceptional pro wrestling match.
Mm.
It was really good, but it just felt like sudden. People didn't get time to get hyped for it because it was just announced 5 minutes before showtime and you barely got like entrances or whatever, and it felt like they were working through an advert. I haven't seen the broadcast, but it felt like at times they were doing that. But at the same time, I love this, the chops were just vile. Garcia hamming it up in his selling of them was great. Him trying to do the stuff that he did at the start of his run, and now he's sort of made it ironic. You know, when he first started, he's like sticking his tongue out and being intense. And it's like, that's not very good. But you're really young. And now he's got this incredible like flamingo dancer character. And now when he can do the biceps and the tongue out, it's to pretend to be hard. And he's like, no, that really hurt.
That was so great.
Like, that really hurt. Like, Garcia is absolutely outstanding at his craft. Between that general story of if he just stopped dicking around, he could really start to compete instead of getting beat in most matches. So there's a lot of that story. And then once he really got into it, there was a beautiful sort of dragon tamer transition. So there's some lush wrestling here in between the strikes. There was a Roddy Strong backbreaker here that popped me as much as like a Vikingo move in the Omega yeah. match, because he's just propelled him up to the rafters, made him fall down, and just got him in the spine. It's he looked great.
He's such a great live in-person wrestler, Roddy Strong, isn't he? Yeah. Not that he's not great on television, but yeah. like, there's something else to seeing him go when he's like in backbreaker form. It's just, it's terrifying. It's absolutely horrifying. It's a chair shot to the head of a move.
Who's like, got the best chop in wrestling? Because there's Gunther, mm-hmm. like there's Drew, and there's Ishii, there's Ospreay.
Yeah, Ospreay's a good one.
Roddy Strong and Jay White are up there as well. Yeah. Like Jay White's against Commander.
I didn't have chop battle in like my note, like my sort of expectations and notes for this match when we saw the graphic, and yet we got an incredible
yeah.
one. Here as well, this was the match where I noticed it the most. Isn't AEW's, like, we'll need more tech-savvy people to explain this to us. If you've ever attended these shows live, the miking of the rings is so odd, because sometimes the chops were so loud, it felt like they were being wired through the PA.
Yeah.
Like, you could hear, there was almost like an echo off the back of a chop.
Aye.
Rather than hearing the slap of skin on skin that you get in the building.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, it was imperfect, but the ones that seemed to catch those microphones, I mean, yeah.
I know.
They were incredible.
Absolutely unbelievable. So, yeah, Strong gets the win. Fans aren't really into this match as much as you'd think, but no. I think that was more, you know, on the general atmosphere. And, all right, we'll make the most of it, even though there's lots of empty seats here. That was the general gist.
Yeah, there's a bit of that.
You know what, I'll tell you what as well. We'll talk more about ROH in the next podcast, but there was that feeling of, all these matches aren't really working to really unglue the crowd. Actually, no, Brian Cage versus Buddy Mack did, but it was still a bit like, this feels like a WWE house show in the UK atmosphere.
Mm.
And then when Cassidy comes out and does Cassidy stuff, it then starts to emulate a proper Dynamite. So just another excuse to put over Orange Cassidy.
Yeah.
Because he's the absolute best. we get a video package of Willow Nightingale winning the New Japan Strong Women's title, defeating Money.
Money, notable. Footage notable of that, Money. Yeah.
It's notable, in it, isn't it? Why would you, if you've got her in the back pocket, mm-hmm. albeit injured, would you show her getting beat the first time?
That's true. I think her face appearing on the screen got another huge reaction, though. So people could people wanted to infer that that time was coming, and that was quite exciting.
Yeah.
Willow Nightingale was great as well. I was in the battle, da, 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 and I won.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely way to deliver that.
It's just the best, yeah. Just so good. And the main event was an authentically excellent Dynamite main event, where it wasn't like 4 3/4 or anything like that, but it was just fast head drops, like really, really competitive. They were really working their arses off, lung bursting sprint. And I had a blast with this without thinking it was one of the best matches in company history or anything of the sort. But what I really liked about it as well is that it was one of those where if the bell time's like 1 hour 46, so you know they've got 12 minutes in an angle, there or thereabouts. So you're thinking, right, you have to work furiously. It's a very simple story of the Lucha Bros realise that Claudio Castagnoli, from bitter experience from Phoenix, is really hard, really big, and really strong. Let's just do our stuff instantly, really quickly, and just try and sort of subdue them into getting something out of this. And what I liked about that is that it tightened the Lucha Bros act up. The Lucha Bros are a great, probably already legendary tag team. There are certain times when they can do the Zero Miedo thing a bit too much.
Yeah.
There are certain times when they try to do really ambitious double teams, like the wheelbarrow stuff, that if that doesn't come off, it looks bad.
Mm.
But this match length and the match story and the fact that they have to get the angle in at the end just really focused them, and you got the best showcase of Lucha Brothers. Like, their stuff live is mint.
Yeah.
It's so good.
So good.
You can't really see them lurking for when to do it either, because they are kind of like practiced in the dark arts of like hiding in plain sight.
Mm.
So it all felt exhilarating. Like, it only for a split second was like, oh, I'm going to get that awesome Canadian destroyer that Penta does.
Yes.
When he jumps off the back. It's like, oh, they're going to do it. Oh, they did it. And absolutely class. And Claudio took it. And people, that was class. And then, yeah, the finish is that the BCC looked like they're going
to
win,
mm-hmm.
the heels. And the dastardly baby faces the Young Bucks, prevent the heels from winning fairly.
Yeah.
Just, it was, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, yeah.
And then the Lucha Brothers win.
Aye.
And then the Young Bucks scarper into the crowd as the baby faces. Optically, this is weird all over the place. I don't know if they were trying to say, all right, well, there's 4 of you and only 2 of us for some reason.
Mm.
It was just odd all around as a scene. And then John Moxley saves it by coming to the ring. And my God, it's so weird that there was an element of taking him for granted in 2022. I was like, oh, Moxley gets the title. That's not CM Punk. You know what I mean? There was a bit of that. In the best year of his career, no less, when he came down and grabbed that mic, I was just like fixated on this like demigod of the promotion and in its lore. And he says that while you've still got your teeth, smile now, you'll not have any come Sunday. We are going to wash you.
And FaceTime your kids while they can still see your teeth.
Yes. We're going to wash the sidewalks with you on Las Vegas Boulevard. We are going to beat you up and reveal yourselves to be amateurs in the most violent match in AEW history. What are they going to do? We'll save it for the preview pod, but I've got a spot to make true that promise. John Moxley's a god.
Like he said, buckle your goddamn seatbelts, and I punch the air.
Yeah, and we were both nerds doing that.
Like he's a heel, and as you say, the Young Bucks in the crowd. Odd choice.
Felt like a 2021. That's the kind of thing he would have said in that feud of the Bucks in 2021. Yes,
him and Kingston.
Yeah,
the working men. Sort of, yeah,
so weird.
It's the Young Bucks. It's all very clowny, isn't it? Like they grab the legs from under the ring. They posted like a selfie of them under the ring from earlier on Twitter, which was quite good. But they grabbed Claudio's legs, so they're holding on, and then he can't get into interfering, and then obviously they lose. But then did you see, obviously, by the ring, they just kept hitting him with super kicks. And I'm not even sure if the cameras were picking that up or picking up the match.
Yeah.
But they were just spamming him on the floor with super kicks. And that was quite entertaining, because that was quite anarchy in the arena-y. It's like, got a moment here. Bang, 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 bang,
kill
bang,
this
bang.
Monster.
Machine gunning with super kicks.
It's this... Kevin Steen described him as, he's a human horse.
He's a huge at the moment as well. Unbelievable shape at the moment.
Jesus Christ. He's quietly been awesome in AEW.
He's been great.
So much great stuff. Before we wrap up, what else did you see that we don't think happened on camera, just as the credits must have rolled on Dynamite?
So funny, I loved it so much. The BCC are in the ring, and Brian picks up Willie Uta, like he's selling from the match, obviously, and then he just gets in his face. So Willie Uta put his hands behind his back and his chin forward, and Brian just slaps him as hard as he can.
Enoki style.
Like, Willie Uta's face has gone red raw. We can see it from where we're sat.
And not even on telly.
And then he's like, Willie Uta's clearly like intensified, but this is like, do it again. And Brian like hits him again even harder. And then like picks him up. All right, you got it, kid. Get up. And then like as they were leaving the ring, you see Brian kind of put an arm around him, like, you all right?
Yeah.
He absolutely leathered it. It was so
funny.
I was really good at character stuff, because Willie then like screamed, didn't he? He's like, look what the bitches is on. Like then he's like,
because I was about to draft a tweet and you just went, slap a beauty. I was like, yes, he is. It's awesome.
It's rules. It's, you know what it is? It's when who was it that mocked the Beast? I think it was when they were baby faces, but somebody was like, oh, in your sweaty, weird gym or something.
It was the Hangman.
That's so... The BCC act is so earnest that it's right for taking the piss
out of.
And it's stuff like that that makes it so... Like, as villains now, more baby faces should be going for that. Like, you weird freaks.
Stop hurting each other.
Like...
It's plaster. Honestly, I had such a great time for the 2 hours.
Look, we couldn't obviously fit him on the plane, but that's the elephant in this room, is we've kind of alluded to it in the intro, and we'll maybe talk a bit more about it on the Rampage preview, but just Dynamite was amazing. Like
Rampage review, I'm not previewing it.
Rampage preview.
I've been. Rampage. I have seen it.
Rampage preview, excuse me.
Review.
What are we doing?
I'm not previewing Rampage.
Oh yeah, we can't preview. Sorry, yes.
We're going to be
doing a Rampage review, and we'll discuss it a little bit more there, because I feel like it's relevant to it. Ring of Honor stuff is probably not yet to air, so we don't want to spoil things for people, but... It's long, like, and it's, again, we're very mindful of not only, like, our privileged position to be over here for work purposes.
Just in general, having it anyway.
Yeah, like, to be able to attend the Dynamite when, like, the UK, as evidenced by the All In Sales, has waited for so long for this. So that I never want to sort of, it's come across like, oh, they went over there and the miserable sods left early or what, anything like that. It's... Too much wrestling. We were there last night.
We'll talk about more in depth on the next one.
Yeah. But like we were there last night, and you're very quickly doing the maths and realizing you would now not go to one of the two night WrestleManias and be in the building as long as you are for that. And everybody said the old WrestleMania was too long.
Yeah.
And knew it and lived it. And it just, I know there's it's content and I know we're kind of stuck with it, but from a fan experience point of view, and that's where we're trying to approach this from.
Yeah.
You bought a ticket, you're going to go watch AEW. It's got this attached and it's got this attached and it's got this attached. And you have your right to leave whenever you want, you know, as we all do. That fan experience can and often probably is tarnished by the way that these like shows, the way they go on, and the Rampage experience, the whole thing. It's all tied in. It's as part of the problem as anything else, yeah. I think, the way that these shows are.
You want it to feel like it's not going to end?
Yes.
Oh, is this a main event? Oh, I'm gutted. Get up for it, though, because you'll... I think that definitely plays a part. But for the 2 hours, at least, and for some of the rest of it, it's not going to be a miserable podcast. We had an absolutely phenomenal time. Thank you again so much for supporting the podcast over the years to, in fact, enable this sort of thing to happen. If you haven't subscribed already and you haven't followed us over the years, you can do so at, basically, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. So subscribe to us and we will do a Rampage review.
Yep.
That will pretty much drop. We'll schedule it just before the show ends,
mm-hmm.
so we can keep it spoiler free. And then you can listen to the review pretty much as soon as you finish watching the show. On Friday,
we kind of recorded that one first because we were just so excited to get to it.
We'll have to check the time. I've got no idea, but I think it's been preempted again.
I think it's Saturday again this time because Matt Hardy
Saturday at midnight or something.
One of the wrestlers, it might have been Matt Hardy, said tomorrow in reference to Double or Nothing.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think that might have been either.
Saturday maybe. Saturday. Yeah,
I will make sure we don't put it out a day early and spoil it or anything like that.
Yeah,
but,
other people outlets do, but we're not going to.
It'll be there to drop.
We'll find out. So yeah, stay around for that. Let us know what your thoughts on Dynamite were from the TV perspective. You can do so under the link to this podcast at WhatCultureWWE on Twitter. Whilst you're there, you can follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow me at MCidric. Once again, thank you so much for joining us. We're having a blast. See you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.